If you're just tuning in, welcome. This is Manga Masala, the South Asian show here on Pi Radio, Manchester's number one youth radio station. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, everyone.
And Simran.
Hi.
In case you haven't noticed, Halima's energy is severely lacking today.
Severely lacking.
Right, I'm going to ask, can you, like, be an actress for me for the next 40 minutes, perhaps?
I could try, guys.
Come on.
Listen, this show, this show is like a family, and being a family, you gotta accept each other at our highs and
right.
our lows.
That when you said at our highs, that was better. So just keep doing that because you're talking about being high.
Like, this is the reality of being a human being, and right. this is like what we like to showcase on the show, guys. I'm not feeling too good today. I'm not feeling that well.
Right, but the reality, my reality is then when I go home, I have to edit it to try and make it sound better because you're so much quieter, so...
Oh, am I really quiet?
You just need to, like, come on.
Yes.
Yes.
What about now?
It's like you need to just...
What about now?
Yeah.
Come on. Channel that, like, lack of energy into anger. Come on. You're good at that.
I don't even have energy for anger.
Just keep talking like that. There we go. Okay. Right. So we've got a bit of limited time today. So let's get straight into it. Let's ease into things with the breakup of the century. I think we call it that. Bigger than, I don't know, J-Lo, Ben Affleck. Bigger than Princess Diana and Prince Charles. Molly May and Tommy.
I should have worn my Zara leather jacket in memorial.
I know. I've got one question and one question only. Fiat 500, how are you doing? are you okay? Like, do you need someone to speak to? Because I
can't tell. Like, I've been seeing a lot of people on, like, TikTok and just on social media. And like, someone posted on their Depop, like, I can't send out orders. I'm grieving right now. And I just don't know, like, is it a joke or are they serious?
I don't think it's a joke. I don't think it's a joke.
Yeah, people are really genuinely distraught. They're like, I need to take a mental health day. Like, I'm absolutely distraught over this news. I'm grieving. Like,
I think there's a lot to be said.
I'm hoping it's more because... Not because they're upset about the breakup, more because, which also is equally not much better, but I guess for them, their relationship represents, like, love and being together and, like, having a family and stuff. So that, to them, I'm assuming it's more like, if they're not going to be together, like, what hope do I have, sort of thing.
I guess it was like a beloved couple for them, yeah.
It's rather
like,
than,
oh, love is not real.
Just been cheated on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Instead of more, like, actually grieving as if they were Molly May.
Yeah. I think it just says a lot about this whole thing of parasocial relationships, doesn't it? And people kind of...
Sorry.
And people latching themselves onto celebrities because I feel like it fills a hole maybe in their own lives, kind of thing.
I think Molly May in general is just very beloved, isn't she, as well?
Like, but she started a big thing, like... She wasn't the first person in this country, but, like, she would wear something and then you'd see it everywhere. I feel like Zoella Loki started it, like, when she would wear, like, her
She
hair
was
and
a major,
bun.
Like, Molly May was a major, major, major influence. I think she probably, like, really patented the Love Island contestant to, like, influence the
pipeline. Yeah, the term influencer, even, I would say. I think she was the first person that went on Love Island and said, like... Probably not the first person that went on Love Island and said, I'm an influencer, but she was the first one that was like, I'm an influencer. And I was like, well, what is that? And then suddenly everyone started, like, wanting to be that.
Yeah. So she had, like... She's already had, like, a massive, massive impact on, like, yeah. I think, young... culture
yeah
in the UK and she's like she is generally very beloved, so I think people have always felt a stake in her life in general.
I think it will be interesting as well to see how this goes, because if you looked at this in black and white, a lot of people would maybe expect that their relationship Tommy Fury would be the essentially breadwinner just because he obviously comes from a famous family, whereas in reality, I'm mistaken, it's her that's the main breadwinner, obviously, with everything she did with, like, PLT and everything, and she's left that now, but, like, yeah.
But that's also, like, I think a big thing in this, like, situation with them is that she really, like, gave up a lot to have their child, raise their child and stuff.
I mean,
like
do
that.
We know that that's the reason or
no, but like isn't it pretty much everyone's going off what her wording was in her statement that like
oh everyone's assuming that she's he's cheated, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, well certainly...
I've seen a lot of rumours as well from other people saying that apparently it's quite well known in a certain Manchester scene that like he's always seen with like other women on nights out and stuff.
Well, I think it's definitely safe to say that in her statement it from my side of things, from what I read into it, it does not seem amicable at all. Like yeah, I cherish our time together, I've done this. It was just the only sort of level of there being any kind of like friendliness was in saying at this time our daughter is the main priority.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same thing as well because she was like, especially not in this way.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like as well that is so like influencery and like so kind of like love on. You just drop that little sentence in there, and then everyone's gonna.
She knew what she was
Everyone's gonna speculate now. So I feel like if you didn't, I feel like that's her way of kind of like being like.
And I think
don't,
that statement would have been PR checked as well, and she would have had her like.
Yeah.
I needed to come across this way, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think she. I think
I think people were saying that she did it quite spontaneously because. Tommy Fury had like posted them on like a date beforehand or something.
It literally like a couple days before he posted an Instagram and the caption was or on Facebook and was like, don't know what I'd do without her. So
she did it suddenly and then he kind of had to like scramble and then he released his statement.
Yeah, but yeah. Hope you're all right.
Love's not real.
Well, look, I think this just goes to show that, like, love... I think it's not that love isn't real. I think it's that love isn't easy. Mm. I think a lot of that kind of... Yeah, mic drop.
This is why literally. He's the one that's married out of all three of us.
No, but I think...
That's deep.
I think it's a case of, like we've said, a lot of people would kind of project themselves onto this relationship and would kind of idealize it as, like, oh, this is, like, what I want. I want to... like fall madly in love with someone over a summer and then we're gonna have a baby and then we're gonna get engaged and blah 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 and like it all like two like people in each of their own kind of career sectors like it's possible and like but like ultimately yeah it is possible but it's not like it's not all like roses basically so don't believe that
and they're just not your be all and end all like your idea of romance doesn't start and end with Molly Mae and Tommy Fury.
Yeah, exactly.
They are just.
And I keep calling him Tommy Hilfiger, and that's just wrong.
What? Why?
I don't know. I just keep saying it back to him.
Oh dear. Anyway, I thought that was just kind of an easy kind of. Before we get into the more serious stuff now, which I think the main thing that I wanted to speak about this week is the latest. And I say the latest because this is an epidemic. The latest events in India in regards to violence against women. So I'm just going to give a little bit of context for those who don't know before we get into this discussion. So last week, a 31-year-old female trainee doctor went to sleep in a seminar hall after completing a hospital shift. This was actually the last time she was seen alive, as the next morning her colleagues discovered her half-naked body on the podium bearing extensive injuries. I've realized as well, I should probably say this is probably trigger warning if you don't want to hear about violence against women or
sexual violence.
Yeah, please turn the volume down and then turn it back up in a bit. But yeah, so they found her body there. Police have arrested a hospital volunteer worker in connection with what they say is a case of rape and murder. Now, just to give a bit of back context to this, in case people aren't aware, sexual violence against women is a massive issue in India. So I've got some stats from 2022, which is obviously like a year and a half ago. So in 2022... India reported more than 445,000 crimes against women, which works out to be roughly around 51 crimes per hour. And this is an increase from 2021 and from 2020. So it is going up every year. In 2022, the most reported crime against women was domestic abuse or cruelty by a husband or relatives. Kidnapping and abduction was the second most reported crime, with over 85,000 cases. Rape was almost reported more than 31,000 times. And in case anyone is out there saying, oh yeah, this is really bad, but like this kind of thing happens everywhere, that might be true, but in 2022, India was ranked 7th across the world for political violence against women, with 125 events per 100,000 women.
And we need, the context to all of this that we need to remember as well is that somewhere like India, who that has like a huge population density and bureaucracy is not exactly kind of the best, the real numbers on the ground will be so much more. Mm. And it has like, you know, a real culture of like secrecy and shame surrounding sexual violence against women. The real on the ground numbers will be, in my opinion, seismically more. These are just the recorded cases, you know, and like you have to consider the fact that people won't speak up. People will be scared to speak up. Culturally, they can't speak up. You also have to consider the fact that maybe officials might be doctoring numbers as well. This is not an accusation, but just a consideration when we kind of really consider the scale and the gravity of things. Because if they're aware that this is a reputation that they have, they're not going to want to really, you know,
brag about it.
Yeah. Exactly. So I can't, I don't feel, and this, by the way, again, is in a wider context of, you know, officials, you know, not necessarily dealing with these matters in exactly the right way. So there is a level of distrust there as well towards Indian authorities when they're kind of being trusted to relay accurate figures. Yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note as well, before we continue, so Mamata Banerjee, she is the chief minister of West Bengal, which obviously Kolkata is in, by the way, in case I hadn't said, this happened in Kolkata most recently. So she is the chief minister. She has been for like over a decade. And back in 2012, she actually received a lot of pushback and a lot of flack because she made a statement that said, quote, rape cases are on the rise because boys and girls interact more freely now. Earlier, if men and women held hands, they would be caught and reprimanded by parents. But now everything is so open. It's like an open market with open options. So this is literally the person that is in control of where this has happened. And she's still in control. And also she's a woman as well.
I was just about to say that the kind of levels, the layers of this are so like deep, because it's like, look, the level of misogyny is so deeply ingrained into Indian society and culture that even women have this extent of internalized misogyny. Like, it's terrifying. And like the way they're talking about women, like open market, open options, as though like they're commodities to be bought and traded, which is a very it's a very well-established, very archaic kind of way of thinking about women, but it's still present in that part of the world. And also it's just like really kind of going into victim blaming, like,
yeah,
it's and I think that's really the issue, because we've had this conversation in depth so many times on this
show. It was one of the first, like, I remember, like, back in, there was a big thing about it, beginning of 2021. I remember I was, like, speaking about it. This has been a big
thing.
We
literally mentioned it last week when we were speaking about Vinesh at the Olympics as well. Mm. So this is something that we speak about on the show. And like, this is why we say there is such an epidemic there, because it's, like, culturally, I feel as though it's mandated within Indian culture, the way that Indian culture is, like, set up. With kind of the deep misogyny, the patriarchy, the entitlement that men are allowed to feel, the shame, the secrecy over like sexuality, so many things, you know, so many facets of Indian culture that basically prime it for this kind of sexual violence against women, and then prime it also for a lack of justice, you know, a complete absence of justice as well. And we have seen numerous uprisings, and this, by the way, is not to say that there isn't any kind of resistance. There are, like, women on the ground are fighting every single day, and that's what we've seen, like, in the aftermath of this horrific event. There have been kind of a lot of Reclaim the Night,
a lot of doctor protests as well,
you know, and truthfully, like, it is, I mean, every single woman should be safe, like, in every single circumstance, you know, whether you could be walking naked down a road in the middle of the night by yourself, and you should still not be susceptible to being raped. However, there is a certain victim blaming logic where people are like, oh, you should have worn this and you shouldn't have gone there and you shouldn't have been alone and blah, 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 blah. Like, this woman followed all the rules that those people set for her. Like, she was at work. She was in her uniform.
Like, in a hospital, of all places.
Which is, you know, a place of safety and security. And exactly, like, she, like, if we're going to follow that kind of victim blaming logic, there's nothing that she did that should have, in their mind, made her susceptible to that, and yet she was. And also, like, the one thing that's really, really kind of insidious about India's rape culture, and I hate calling it that, but that's what it is that they have a lot of gang rapes. And think that this is what the case was. I think they'd found the fluids of multiple different men inside of this doctor. Okay. So it wasn't just one person. They had found multiple different sources of fluid, but that is like, I just feel like that's another kind of level of just like insidiousness. Is that there's rape and then there's gang rape, do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's just so horrendous.
I think it's so hard to talk, like, to make any like new takes on this situation, because we've spoken about it so many times, like, it's just exhausting at this point. But I think, like, this case, not only is it just like signifies to the wider problem in India, which is absolutely endemic there, but I think now, like, to the people that want to victim blame, like, there aren't even any more like contingent situations that we can offer up to these people, because everyone has followed every rule that they've been told about not going out unchaperoned at night, wearing appropriate clothing and air quotations. Like, there are so many cases now of sexual violence against women and girls that there isn't even like a small little contingency that can't be followed at this point that you can use to victim blame someone, because the stats literally show that children are not safe, people of faith are not safe, women walking in broad daylight, women with respectable jobs are not safe, animals, other men. Just no situation that you can actually use anymore to victim blame, because there isn't a situation a woman can exist in where she's safe from this kind of violence.
I agree.
Yeah, like you've both said, there's not really that much we can offer in terms of, like, obviously it's not on us to find a solution to this
I've said before on the show, like, this needs an institutional level of change. Like, this is not just going to be like a slap on the wrist, like, oh, this is bad, don't do it. This is like a complete, India needs a complete culture shift, you know, and they need to tackle issues like misogyny, patriarchy, sexual harassment, entitlement, women empowerment. Like, these are the core issues that they need to be tackling, because the rape kind of epidemic is a symptom of those wider structural cultural issues. And if you're going to tackle it at the root, that's where you need to be looking at.
Yeah. But while it's being so lightly punished and allowed, so many people are allowed to get away with it on such a gigantic scale, the kind of fabric that this is so deeply embedded into will not be changed until it's literally undertaken on a nationwide scale.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I don't
institutionally
know.
Nationally, I'm talking education, just, like, put it in the curriculum.
We're up against such a beast of it at the moment because we're just so deep into it.
Yeah, and I also personally have little faith that they, even now, this will be seen as a priority.
Unfortunately, like, the amount of things that we've spoken about on this program, on this show, that, like, that have happened, the next thing just comes along, and then we're outraged all over again, and then it happens again. But while people still think this way, and you have people in positions of power and women in positions of power that are upholding these attitudes, we're not going to see that kind of change that we need to see from an institutional level.
Yeah, I mean, our entire solidarity goes with the victim's families and friends. And right now, our entire, like, full weight of support goes behind the protesters, the women who are reclaiming the night, the women who are marching the streets right now, campaigning for this. I know it seems very, very bleak, but I always say, like, we have to believe in change. Otherwise, like, it's all, you know, it's It's hopeless.
Well, yeah. And I mean, obviously, we've got the example of Bangladesh recently as to see if that it literally can be achieved. Like, it's not... Because I think people often think of, like, resistance and revolt as, like, a kind of historical thing.
It's not.
Yeah. Like, but I've been guilty of that, like, thinking, like, oh, but, like, people are too lazy now, but, like...
I mean, there's literally women on the street right now. And if we say that, oh, there's no hope, then we're basically just, you know, like, squashing their efforts or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Awesome. Right. Moving on to the next point of conversation. And also, Simran has asked, can we both please speak up? So,
sorry, I'm genuinely doing my best. I am.
Right. You know what? You two have a little chinwag whilst I sort the camera out.
Oh my god, chinwag. Guys.
What?
The luteal phase needs to be studied. We need better research into women's healthcare.
Is that the phase where the egg breaks out?
My god, I don't know. It's that post-ovulation, pre-menstrual. Like that last week, 10 days.
Oh, yeah.
Before you start your new cycle.
I hate that.
Tell me why. I literally want to, like...
Yeah.
I can't even say it on radio. My god, you know?
Yeah, all of
and
that.
Like, there's actually like research into it, like how you can look in the mirror and you don't your face has changed. Like your face actually changes and you see a different person in the mirror. I literally the last week it has kind of subsided now, but still the last week I literally think I've been verging on psychosis.
Yeah.
I have lost my mind in this last week and it has been kicking my butt. I am desperate to be out of this phase.
Yeah,
I cannot believe we go through this every month.
I came on my period like yesterday, today, whatever. And so for me, same. The past week I've been like, for me, it's like emotions and mood swings is like, and it is without, you know what I always say, like I use a period tracking app. Well, I always say like my symptoms are so kind of like concrete that I could track my cycle without knowing what day it is, without looking at a tracker app, just by how I'm feeling, just by the level of like PMS and moodiness or what my eating habits are like or whatever. But for me, that week is so like my moods are awful.
I've been going through it, you know, like. I feel like such a universal experience, like you're in it, you're getting ready for something. It's kind of like a high stakes event and something is just off. Your hair is off or you can't get your eyeliner straight. I know this sounds so arbitrary, but it's not.
It's not.
And it makes you just want to curl up in a ball and cry.
Scream.
Yeah. And break things.
Yeah.
And just, it's so like feral, like it comes from within and I can't even describe it. Like it just...
I know, I hate you. Oh, that's literally been me this past
week. It makes the week of being on your period seem like a walk in the park.
That week is worse for me than not being on my period.
Yeah. Now, as I get older, the clarity really is coming from the fact that this week is worse than being on.
Yeah, 100%. I know because I'll just start crying at anything. Like, things that I don't usually cry at, like, I'll just be crying at anything.
Oh, my God. I'm a mess.
Yeah, I hate it.
That's you wanted me to chit-chat? I chit-chat, got lost.
I put my headphones down and went to sort the camera out. I came back, but all I heard was egg. So I was like, wait, they're talking about cooking or something. And I put my headphones on and I was like, oh, okay. that's what
this is another favourite topic of conversation
You know when they say, like, we literally have, like, a week of being normal in a month?
I don't even have that. I feel like I've got... Because I get, like, post-menstruation cramps. I don't know if you get that. But I get cramps after I've finished my period.
Them, like, now. Like, I'm not on, but I'll have cramps.
Yeah, I'll start getting it a few days before. I'll have it the week of my period, or however long that lasts, and then I'll have it a few days afterwards as well. So it's really, really no rest for the wicked over here. I hate it.
Well, continuing the sense of bad vibes.
Bad vibes island.
That actually seemed really like it loud. Physically pained Halima.
Yeah, it was too loud. I'm sorry. It was too loud.
That might have just pushed me over the edge.
Sorry. Best bet you wish you could hear my vocals now.
Yeah, I never thought I'd miss your vocals.
I don't know if either of you two have seen this, but it is topic that I want to talk about it for this week's Bad Vibes Island is actually kind of a bit of a follow-up from the riots last week.
The sentencing.
Yeah. So, obviously, we have seen that a number of far-right rioters have been sentenced to jail time for partaking in these riots. I think sentences of around, like, 2 years for some of them. Which ultimately, I think the whole fact they brought in these 24-hour courts probably will have helped kind of dispel the riots. But I think
they brought them in this time.
Yeah, they brought in these 24-hour courts so that they could quickly sentence people, which is good in terms of obviously it sends out a message that don't partake in this, otherwise you're going to end up going to jail. But also, I think it's important that people don't see that as where this kind of rehabilitation and educating people ends, because ultimately sending people to jail and not doing anything about it isn't going to do anything. Like, we need to actually look at the root causes of why this happened, and I think that starts by the people in power actually addressing the fact that these were racist and Islamophobic riots rather than just calling it civil unrest or whatever they're talking about. That aside,
also the context of these 24-hour courts is very I think that Keir Starmer was one of the people that pioneered it during the 2011 London riots, which were a lot of the sentencing was just massively racialized. But I'm already a bit
Well, you would think that these 24-hour courts would be for the far right rioters. However, we have seen a number of people from non-far-right groups, so whether they be Islamic or simply people of colour, that have also been handed sentences. And one of these in particular has got people talking. So, obviously there were riots across the country. One of the riots that took place was in Plymouth, and a young Muslim man was sentenced to 20 months in prison for throwing cans at far-right rioters who, for context, had just been chanting racist slurs at him and thrown alcohol in a bottle or a can at him. So in a sense, he was simply retaliating, arguably self-defense, one might say. So for context as well, he has no previous convictions. The judge that sentenced him said he had accepted that he had not been looking for trouble and that rioters had been throwing missiles and making deeply offensive racist chants. However, he then sentenced him to 20 months in prison, saying, "What you should have done was rise above their simply obnoxious racism. You were capable of doing that, but you didn't. Instead, what you did was throw four missiles at one of one sort or another at the group opposite." So it's basically saying, yes, you were being racially abused and people were throwing stuff at you. What you should have done is just risen above it and just turned the other cheek. You shouldn't have done anything.
I feel like this is just an insane, you know what it is? It's hard to take. It's hard to kind of really dignify this as a judicial or a moral position, because really what's happening.
Sorry, do you mind just moving it a bit? Sometimes I feel
Hello? Okay, yeah, cool. It's hard to dignify and justify this position as a legitimate judicial or moral stance, because really what's happening is that they're simply making an example out of the guy, in my opinion. It's not that morally and judicially this is the kind of logical and inevitable outcome of his actions. It's that they are kind of, I think, appearing to be to balance the scales, I guess, because obviously even though one side were kind of disproportionately the perpetrators and they had started it, I know it sounds really childish, but you know, it was a riot at the hands of the far right, and anyone else who was involved was simply either protecting themselves or retaliating. But there nevertheless was conversations, people coming and being look at how the people are retaliating, they're causing violence and they're doing this, and you know, they're just as bad and they're just as much to blame. And I feel as though the kind of legal authorities in this country need to seem as though they are not just, you know, and there were accusations of two-tier care, you know, like that two-tier policing kind of idea that...
Also, Elon Musk is literally like...
Yeah. Ridiculous. But yeah, Elon Musk was one of the people coming forward and being like, okay, well, is anyone protecting the far-right protesters, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think there is the legal authorities, I think, might have felt compelled to kind of like pay some credence to that. And I think what's happened here is that they therefore have made an example out of this young man to kind of be like, okay, well, this is because I guess like it's about precedent as well. And
but I'm also just like, look, like, and I feel like we are okay to like talk about this because ultimately this trial has happened, the person has received the sentence, whatever. But it's just, I'm just kind of like, look. I kind of get that, like, it kind of opens up a, like, Pandora's box if you're going to say to anyone, if someone does something to you, you are allowed to do that back, like, as an open statement. I get that maybe that's a bit, like, saying that without any context kind of can lead to, like, problems. That being said, like... like, I don't know. I just feel like, come on, maybe you should have got, like, if you need to, like, make an example, maybe, like, community service or something, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I'm saying this is what's happened and that's what's bad because you should not be sentenced on a basis of being made an example out of. You should be sentenced based on kind of judicial legitimacy. That's how sentencing and law and order should work. But they've simply made an example out of this young man. And as a result of that, he's facing kind of disproportionate and, like, I believe personally, really unreasonable punishment. Like him throwing a can at a group of people because he was the person in danger. Because he was. Like I know you said before, one might argue self-defense. But it is self-defense. We have seen numerous examples of... you know, minority people being attacked, being maimed. There have been deaths. There have been actual deaths, multiple deaths throughout this riot. That man should not, in that situation, have to exercise discernment on whether someone might fatally injure him or not.
Yeah.
His concern is for his life. I know 1,000,000%. If I was in that situation, I'm not going to sit there and be analysing a number of different factors to be like, might this group of people kill me? Because as far as I know, they will, because there have been examples of exactly that happening. Mm-hmm. And I will then take whatever action I need to take to make sure that I'm protected.
Also, is it not a case that for... if we're going to look at the history of this, back in the 70s and 80s, the whole reason why... South Asian communities, for example, were able to kind of establish a sense of like living in peace, etc., was because they stood up to these far-right people.
It wasn't living in peace. The reason why they all weren't genocided was because, like, that's what we're talking about. It's not just living in peace. It's the reason that they all weren't. And I'm talking, like, my family were here in that time. All that time was when all the men in my family were here, and kind of the stories that they have are crazy of P-word bashing, like, because they lived in Longsight, they lived in Oldham, that's where my family were based, which were immigrant heavy areas. The stories that they were being petrol bombed, they were having dogs set on them, they were having bricks thrown at their heads, they could not walk by themselves. And like, I've sat with multiple men in my family and have been told stories about how to go from one house to the other, they would have to be a group of five or six of them. To go to the mosque that's down the road, there would have to be a group of five or six of them. To go to school, there would have to be groups of them. Like, they could not go anywhere by themselves. And as Carlos was saying, the reason that they weren't, you know, killed and injured during these times is because they resisted exactly that. And like, that's exactly what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a continuation of that practice of P-word bashing. It's just as violent, and therefore it requires a level of resistance, otherwise you will die.
Yeah. And I think
the onus shouldn't be on you. The onus shouldn't be on you to have to discern, to have to rise above the situation. Mm. No, sorry. You are that my life is in danger. I'm not going to rise above the situation. I'm going to do what I need to do to protect myself.
Yeah. I think the thing that is kind of like the final cherry on top of the cake.
No, I need to say one more thing. Sorry. And it's so funny, this phrasing of turn the other cheek or rise above it, something like that.
I think he said rise above it.
Rise above it. It's the sentiment of turning the other cheek. Why is the onus always on the victims, always on us to rise above situations, to be the bigger person? This sentiment, this practice of bigger personism, I don't believe in it. How much, like, if we continue, and this is, I'm not inciting anything, I'm not condoning anything, I'm simply saying ideologically, if we continue to be the bigger people and rise above situations, we end up victimizing ourselves because people will then think that, well, they're not going to do anything. They're fair game, you know? And like every single person on this earth, no matter what context, has the right to stand up for themselves, to protect themselves, you know? And it's this kind of idea of respectability politics. And I think that the authorities are, they kind of like overdo it with us minority because they kind of are aware that there's a sense of a lot of minorities overcompensate with good behavior in the West anyway because they're so worried about this asterisk over their head. They don't want to be seen as bad. They don't want to be seen as problematic. They want to give a good representation of their race and their ethnic group, and therefore they overcompensate with good behaviors. We spoke about the good immigrant kind of myth last week, and I think it's that thing, and I think that authorities often really play into that, but when they're imploring one demographic of people to rise above it and turn the other cheek and not the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything to add, Simran?
I was going to say, it really gives, like, when I was in school and I'd be, like, talking to someone and then I'd get told off and I'd be like, but they started talking to me first, and they'd be like, well, you're expected to rise above it. Like, you're expected to, like, you know, why are you stooping down to their level? Like, no, that's not how it works. But on top of that, I actually have kind of a take on, like, what's happened since it's calmed down, sort of. And I think, like, what we saw, what happened in Leicester Square in London, like, where a mother and a daughter were stabbed.
Yeah.
Literally in Leicester Square in London. Yeah. And the person who did it was a white man. Yeah. And the person who apprehended him was a Muslim man. I think he was a security guard in a shop nearby. Mm-hmm. And it just doubles down on the fact that what happened in the last couple of weeks was not because of the stabbing in Southport. It was not because of those girls.
Absolutely.
And like I said that before the Leicester Square thing happened. But it's just insane because it's just, it was bubbling and these people needed the outlet. Yeah. And that for them was the trigger point.
Yeah.
That's all they needed. But I do think, like, and we also touched on this when we spoke about the riots in our last episode, but in this like post riot world now that we're living in the last week or so, like, I think Martin put something on his story about this, and it like basically just said everything that I was thinking, but it was essentially like, we've all moved on from it, I guess, as a country, even though we haven't, but I suppose we have, because now we're talking about other things. But you can still walk down the street as a minority and walk past someone and think twice, like, were you in the streets, like, protesting and doing all that?
We said this last week. We said it's never going to be the same again because you've seen,
like,
now.
It'll never be the same.
It's kind of like when you see someone's
average person turned.
Yeah.
And you'll second guess, like, forever now. Did someone participate, and do you harbor those thoughts, and is that the way that you think about me and my people and how, what the state of this country is? Do you know what I mean? Like, now every time that you, like, we will always have that in our heads, and other people don't have to deal with that now. They just got to throw their cans and drink the beer, and like, it's done. Now the football's back on and everything's cool.
Yeah,
I think there's something to be said as well that, like, again, There are examples of people that have, like, been apprehended or whatever, and it's kind of like it is justified. For example, I know there were people who were who attended counter demonstrations. I think it was in Leeds, and they were arrested because they spoke in a megaphone to a crowd and said something about needing to slit the throats of the far right people. Which at that, I'm like, fair enough. Like, you are literally inciting killing over people, like. Right, I think that anyway. You can't go on a mega. You can say, look, we need to defend ourselves. We need to do this. Like, you can't say, I actively want to slit the throats of other people.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds like it was just a phrase, but yeah, sure. I guess you can't really say that.
You can't get on a megaphone and speak to a crowd of people that are already aggravated, understandably, and say, let's go and slit the throats of the people that we're up against. You can't do that. But with this, he was literally retaliating to something that had happened to him. Mm. Like, he was the victim in the situation. And I think it's the final thing that I want to say on this is that there were three far-right protesters in Plymouth who received sentences at the same time, and one of them only got 18 months.
How long did this guy get?
20. Yeah. So literally one of the far-right protesters who he was defending himself against, I don't know if this was the person who threw the can or whatever, but still at the same riot, he ended up getting less jail time than the person who was literally a victim. So it's not... I think... Ozzy, in my opinion. It's not right. It's not right at all. Yeah, here we are.
Bad Vibes Island is Bad Vibes Islanding.
You want me to lighten the mood for the last 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Guys, what do you think of jorts?
Oh, I don't love them, you know.
I used to be...
What?
I don't love them.
Carlos?
I used to be a very avid wearer of them, and I think when I actually put on a bit of weight, I was like, okay, they're not as comfortable anymore. Maybe if I get skinny again, then I'd be back in for them.
I think it's... Okay. You know what? Actually, I feel like it's... sometimes it just doesn't look... You have to style it right, I think.
Because I like them. Can't lie. And I think I'm going to buy a pair. And I actually tried some on the other day. But they weren't... The jorts I tried on were nasty. They were not nice. But I tried on cargo. They're not jorts then. But they were like cargo pants. But they're like 3/4. But baggy.
That is nice. Crazy. Yes. That was my swag when I was like 8 years old. I cannot believe.
I was going to say, like, I swear
fashion
that's
really
like,
repeats yeah, itself. It's crazy. Wow.
Well, no, I mean,
it's
that.
Crazy because I used to have like Bratz dolls that used to wear that.
That's insane.
That, what you've described, like, not denim, that is me literally look. Like, I'm wearing 3/4. Like,
I can't
yeah.
see. I can't see.
Yeah, but I'm wearing 3/4. Like,
3/4. Like, wow. Like, yeah. That is crazy.
No, because I
yeah,
like
capri,
it.
Capri pants are bad.
No, but I feel like with women it's different. Like with men, it was kind yeah, of always no, there. Yeah. But with that's really what like cargo like, 3/4 was
I
my swag
like
when I was like 8, 9.
To my core, I am Adam Sandler. Do you know what I mean? Like
oh
in the
gosh.
Way that he dresses. Like fair really, enough. Really well and truly. If you strip it all back, I want a double XL T-shirt and double XL.
Yeah,
trousers.
But it looks so much better on you than him. Like he might be attributed to Adam Sandler, but you are attributed to so much better. Like,
but look, like it's really just giving me what I want in terms of how I want to dress, and yeah. I love that.
I love that for you then. I trust your styling capabilities to make yeah. you look good.
Oh my God, guys. And this time next week, it will be one day before I go to Ibiza. And tell me why I'm terrified.
Why? Of what?
But like Ibiza is just like the most intense place on earth.
No, it's not. It's actually, what are you going for? A party holiday or?
Hindu.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's yeah, no, but you can make it what you want because it's actually an objectively stunning island. Like the nature is
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You can, but I feel like if you're going as part of a Hindu,
I'm sure if I will be looking at the nature.
I mean, you
should
you know,
steal
you,
away.
You
for
can't. You
some
can't
time.
Not like it is all around you, but then ultimately it is like yeah. Is
That's
this the Charlie
though.
XCX or is this no? Not that.
No, it's just no. for my cousin.
Cool. You go in the ocean beach.
I am going to.
Yeah, nice. Love that. You know what's so funny is that I've been to Ibiza with my friends, but the person that was taking us, it was they basically paid for everything. So I had a proper bougie experience.
God, when?
Exactly. Like, so I think we can never go back now because we've experienced that highlight.
Yeah.
Like, I could never go back and I'd be
slumming.
Yeah, literally. Like, now I've been on like a table with like massive bottles and everything. Like,
it is one of those things where like the patriarchy does do you favors in those instances, like on such a shallow, superficial, giving up all my morals kind of way.
Yeah, true. Especially when it's was it Gary Lineker's brother that runs Ocean Beach as well, which
that's
I don't
so
want to get sued for defamation, but personally
so
I find him a bit. Yeah.
I find him so funny, like.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2 weeks time I'll give you guys the review.
Can't wait.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Tell you what you will get, though. Really good weather. So happy for you from that
I'll
perspective.
I'll get what?
Really good weather. So I'm happy for you
yes,
from that perspective.
Yes, I really want to be tanned.
Yeah, you will.
Jealous.
Right. Well, thank you, everyone, that stuck with us despite the technical difficulties. We will be back next week.
Bye.
Hopefully. We need to figure out that. But, yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
See you later.